So, the first one is questions to the Leader of the Council. Is there a question from a Liberal Democrat member?
There is, thank you, Madam Chairman. Does the Leader of Hertfordshire County Council agree with me that Hertfordshire is better off within the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and is thus better off inside the European Union?
I have a personal view on this matter, but not one that I can advance on behalf of the County Council in this capacity.
Supplementary. I know you have a personal view. It might have been interesting to hear what that personal view was. But would you ensure with your Chancellor that should there be a no vote, that the County Council will make provision for the 2 million expats, of which an estimated 100,000 come from Hertfordshire, to be accommodated within Hertfordshire if there were to be a vote to remove Hertfordshire and the UK from the European Union?
Naturally, we will keep an eye on the way that things seem to be going, and as and when a decision is known, we will act appropriately.
Thank you. Is there a question from a Labour member? Leon Reef.
Sure, thank you. Could I ask the Leader of the Council, does he keep an eye on the goings-on of Hertfordshire Twitter feed?
Rarely.
It's a serious question, Chair, because in the last few days there has been some mindless and quite idiotic propaganda put out in the name of Hertfordshire County Council on their Twitter feed. And I just wonder if you'd make inquiries as to actually who is actually posting this stuff, which is complete nonsense that most people on my Twitter feed line actually don't even understand.
It would be helpful if you draw my attention outside the meeting, Leon, to precisely what material you're referring to, but I will gladly make some inquiries.
Thank you very much. Is there a question from a Conservative member? No. Thank you. So we move on to questions to the Executive Member for Community Safety and Waste Management. Is there a question from a Liberal Democrat member? Nick Hollinghurst. There's a bit of a squabble here.
Very quick question. In view of the fuss and bother that we've had with energy from waste and the fact that Veolia are now having a go at Hoddesdon with an energy from waste facility, but there are a lot of transport and access problems associated with the location and the site, Does the executive member have a plan B in case things go pear-shaped again?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The application will be one for Veolia if and when this authority takes the decision to proceed with the contract with that company. I did this morning in my response to the budget debate mention the dates of the 4th of March, the 14th of March and the 22nd of March, and until such time as it has gone through due process, I don't think we are in a position to decide whether or not there will be a contract with that company or there will not be a contract with that company. If there is a contract with that company, it will be a matter for them to deal with the issues that arise in connection with a planning application, and it's not for me or for my portfolio to comment on those.
Thank you very much. Yes, a supplementary.
Thank you for that. The main reason I've got of concern is that we have to enter into further interim arrangements for the disposal of waste, which could prove to be rather more expensive than the standard arrangements we've been making in the past.
Thank you. Richard Thake again.
Was that a statement, Madam Chairman, or a question? Thank you. Madam Chairman, we have in place arrangements which will enable us to continue to deal with the waste arisings for Hertfordshire up to 2018 with the capacity to extend that contract to 2021. So we are not in a position where we have to have any knee-jerk reactions, and I am satisfied that the report which will be brought to my panel and subsequently through Cabinet and onto Council will deal with these matters in full, and they will be properly and fully debated.
Thank you very much. Is there a question from a Labour member? Richard Henry.
Thank you, Chair. In light of the Herts County Council statistics on the increase in fly tipping, which I have here from February 15, there was 900, and in November 15, there was over 1,300. Would the portfolio holder agree with me that this is a clear indication that the partial closure of waste and recycling centres has had a detrimental impact on the county?
No. The figures which you've got there have been provided by our lead officer on the Herts Waste Partnership and come from the fly capture recording, which is a statutory requirement of the districts and boroughs, who are the collection authorities, to report in, and there has been a clear upward trend over the 4 years that data or data is available. There is no correlation. I have examined this, and there is absolutely no correlation in terms of any uplift or spike in that data which is comparable with the time at which my predecessor implemented these changes. There is an upward trend, that is very true, but there is absolutely no correlation between that and the changes which were made to the household waste recycling centres.
Thank you very much. Is there a supplementary? Richard, yeah. Again.
Thank you, Chair. Given the changes in the Herts Waste Partnership across the county of the looking at fly tipping as opposed to littering and stuff, will the county keep statistics of black bags that aren't used as designated as fly tipping but clearly litter or waste on the highway or in people's residential areas? Will the county be keeping those statistics as well?
Thank you. Richard Thake again.
Madam Chairman, the fly capture process is, as I say, is a statutory one in which the collection authorities report in, and this is managed by the police. We obviously have access to that records or those records, the same as all the districts and boroughs do. And frankly, it's not an issue or a matter for which that this authority has the responsibility or the capacity to deal with it.
Thank you very much. Is there a question from the Conservative side? Yes, Tim Hutchins.
Thank you, Chairman. As a local member, afflicted, conflicted or whatever, by the Veolia's proposals coming forward, I'm more than interested in what they're going to be proposing. I'm assuming that what they're proposing will have a number of complex conditions applied to it, which will require some quite in-depth consideration before we move forward. I am a little concerned that I've yet to see a report on this. The 4th of March is fast approaching. Can you tell us when the reports will be released for members?
Richard Thake.
Madam Chairman, the report will be put into the public domain and available to all members from the 25th of this month.
Thank you. And I don't think there's a supplementary, so we're going to move on to questions to the Executive Member for Enterprise, Education and Skills. A question from a Liberal Democrat member, Sarah Bedford.
Thank you, Chairman. Earlier this year, there was an announcement that the government would be increasing the amount of free nursery education available for 3- and 4-year-olds. Unfortunately, there's been no detail on this provided, and a number of local parents are asking when this will be put on the website. The website only contains the information to say that, firstly, there is no further information, and secondly, that only a, quote, very small number of children will benefit from it. This is, however, preventing parents planning for the education settings for their children. It's preventing them planning from going back to work for longer hours. It's preventing employers knowing how many hours they can expect those parents to be back at work. And it's preventing childcare providers from planning thoroughly from what they want to do. Does the Cabinet Member believe this is appropriate? And if not, when will he be bringing the details forward? Thank you.
As far as I'm aware, the details from central government have not been released, but I will take away and look into the question and respond directly to the to Councillor Bedford.
Thank you very much. Sarah, a supplementary.
Thank you. In light of the new and exciting relationship, it appears, between the Conservative administration and ministers in Westminster, could he please expedite this and say how urgent it is? But also, it makes me wonder, how did Hertfordshire bid to become a pilot for this without having any idea what it might entail or what they might be expected to do?
David Williams again.
I have to say I have the very good fortune of being in the presence and being with the Secretary of State for Education next Saturday. And so I will take that opportunity and take forward and I will take up Councillor Bedford's issue and report back to her.
Thank you very much. Is there a question from the Labour, from a Labour member? Judy Billing.
Yes, thank you. I was waiting to be asked as a Labour member last time, but the only comment I was going to make about the admissions policy, I will now turn into a question, which is that since I've been here, I have found the almost labyrinthine bureaucracy involved in changing policy on admissions in our community schools incredibly frustrating, in that it seems to take at least 3 years to get any change for families which are affected right now. It makes European Commission bureaucracy seem as of nothing. And I just wonder whether we could possibly have a review into this rather than me just being told by officers all the time that's how we do it.
Thank you. David Williams.
The basis of the consultations that happen about admissions changes are set by statute. So we have just gone through the process now, whether it's an academy or the authority as a whole, has been consulting in relation to the admissions requirements for September 2017. So that creates a statutory length of period that we're having to work around. Now, in the case of Hitchin Secondary Schools, I know that officers have worked closely with two local members, and I do applaud the way that they have engaged with officers in order to take forward some of the concerns of Hitchin parents. You'll have seen the response of the Deputy Director back to some Hitchin parents, but I think all of us as local members need to recognise some of the timeframes involved, and if we are interested in making a case, whether it's to the academy or to the authority itself, then you need to realise the timeframes that are involved.
Thank you very much. Is there a supplementary, Judy?
Yes, there is. The academy process seems to be less labyrinthine, strangely, than our own community schools. If all this is set by statute, could I ask the executive member to add to his list of things to discuss on Saturday with the education minister, making changes that make it more possible for us to serve the needs of the families that we represent?
Thank you. David Williams again.
I'm happy to bear that in mind if I have the opportunity to raise the issue with the Secretary of State.
Thank you very much. Is there a question from a Conservative member? No? So let us move on. A question to the Executive Member for Environment, Planning and Transport. Is there a question from a Liberal Democrat member? Oh, look, once again, it is quite helpful to know from whom to take the question, given that two Lib Dem people have indicated. So, Malcolm Cowan.
Thank you very much. In the face of the long-running, continual high level of cancellations of trains by the so-called Great Northern Rail Company, whose services I have the misfortune to have to use at weekends, I was somewhat surprised to see a large article from the portfolio holder a few weeks ago in my local paper saying the answer was for them to cancel more of the services, presumably in the fervent hope that what was left would run to time. He was very quickly rebutted by Great Northern, who said that meant we would be cancelling services we could be running, which didn't seem a very great idea. Is it not a better way forward for us to work together to focus on Great Northern's many manifest failures, including the south of the Thames operation, where they've been given a yellow card at least once by DfT, rather than suggesting that those of us who only have one fast train an hour should lose it for the benefit of those who have three
Thank
fast
you.
Trains an hour?
Thank you. I'm going to call Derek Ashley to answer.
I think we're all aware of the problems on the Great Northern and Thames Link, and members will know that I've been fairly active in pursuing Govia related to these problems. The quote he alludes to related to my comments on the basis that people would much rather have a train service they can rely on when the train was turning up than a more frequent train service when half of them don't turn up. I think that was a perfectly reasonable suggestion, particularly on those corridors where there's relatively frequent service. As I say, it'd be much better for people that if the trains were running every 15 minutes, ran every 30 minutes, if people knew the 30-minute ones were going to turn up rather than the 15-minute ones hardly ever turning up. So I think that was made in that context. But I have been pressing, and I've met Govia, and this week I wrote to the press again, echoing my support for the London Travel Watch comments they're making about these services. Fact is that Govia bit off more than they could chew when they took on the franchise, and the Department of Transport was asleep at the wheel. That is my view. They did very little due diligence to ensure the new franchisee had the wherewithal to run the services, and they are still catching up. Now, we appreciate they're trying to recruit drivers like there's no tomorrow, and I think they're being fairly successful in that, but nevertheless, this is a catch-up operation, and we shouldn't have been in this situation in the first place. And Malcolm is quite right, there are still problems, less I think there were a few months ago, but nevertheless you get an occasional day where there's a lot of cancellations and it's extremely irritating. We will continue to press some Govia, and I've written to the Department of Transport on this issue as women's issue as well, because I think when they're letting future franchises, they do need to do a great deal more due diligence than perhaps they've done in the past to ensure the new franchisee can deliver on what they're promising.
Thank you very much. Is there a supplementary? Malcolm.
Thank you, and I'm glad that Councillor Ashley feels able to be frank with us about the performance of this company. I don't think would he agree that the situation is not helped by them claiming the problem is shortage of drivers? It clearly is not shortage of drivers, because they run a far more intensive service during the week. The problem surely is that the drivers, for whatever reason, are unwilling to work on Sundays as a rest day. And a little bit more candour from the operator would, I think, help rather than cloud the situation, which is what they're appearing to do. Does he agree?
Well, normally I'd say yes to that, but it gives me another opportunity to comment, does it not? I mean, the previous franchisee had a policy of encouraging an overtime and filling the gaps with overtime. Govia are trying to pursue a policy of not paying overtime, but paying a much higher basic wage. Well, of course, the higher the basic wage there is, the less volunteers you'll get for the overtime. The drivers are now on about £60,000 a year basic. There's no incentive for them to actually work much more if they don't have to. They're on a four-day week, £60,000 a week basic. So who would want to work weekends if you're getting that kind of money? So I would agree with Malcolm's comments. Now, if we've been promised all's going to be well by Easter. That has been stretched to July, so we'll see how they operate this year. I'll continue to actually make representations to the Department of Transport, because ultimately they hold the sanction over these operations.
Thank you very much. Now, is there a question for the Executive Member for Environment, Planning and Transport from the Labour Group? Sharon Taylor.
Thank you. In relation to the planning responsibilities in your area, you've heard our proposals around the provision of housing in the county, and this is vital to the economy of Hertfordshire, and as we look at the local plans being drawn up, increasing numbers of houses trying to be brought forward, but no mechanism to deliver them yet. Would you, with your colleague, the Chancellor for Hertfordshire, or the Executive Member for Resources and Performance, be prepared to meet, and in view of the situation around the impending return of right to buy receipts to the Treasury, if we don't do something about this, to meet urgently with members of my group to discuss how we might move the proposals forward?
Thank you. Derek Ashley again.
I mean, there's two issues here, really. One is the issue relating to provision of housing. I'll just make the point once again in this chamber. We are not a planning authority and we're not a housing authority. The other issue in terms of strategic planning, we are clearly concerned about, and members will know that we have a number of concerns about the emergence of some of the local plans in the county. But by and large, these issues should be debated more fully and more intensively at local planning authority and housing authority level. I don't think this is something that necessarily the County Council will necessarily ride to the rescue on, and I think primarily it should be something for the local planning and housing authorities. Well, having said that, we hear what everyone has said in the chamber, but I wouldn't want us to get into any situation where we commit ourselves to any particular course of action in relation to the provision of housing.
Thank you very much. Is there a supplementary?
I wasn't asking for a commitment in the chamber. I was asking if we could have a meeting to discuss proposals. I've had discussions with the Minister for Housing on this, and if we can come forward with a proposal from Hertfordshire, he is likely to accept it. He understands we don't want to return Hertfordshire money back to the Treasury to perhaps be spent on issues that aren't housing. So he's quite happy to accept a proposal, but it needs to be a Hertfordshire-wide proposal because there are issues in the various boroughs where this housing could be delivered, which means we wouldn't have time to do it. So if it's possible to have a meeting to discuss that, we might be able to deliver some housing which will support economic growth in Hertfordshire.
Thank you. Derek Ashley.
Yeah, okay. I mean, we can consider what you've raised today, but as I say, I'm not sure that Hertfordshire as an authority can necessarily come to the rescue, but certainly we're prepared to consider it.
Thank you very much. Is there a question from a Conservative member? William Wyatt-Lowe.
Is the executive member aware of the recent use of the Hertfordshire Twitter feed to promote a service from Hempstead Station by bus to Mayland's Business Park, which only takes 15 minutes, goes through my division, and did he say...
I'm really sorry, William. Mr. Wyatt-Lowe, could you address the microphone when you speak? I'm going to have to ask you to repeat the question, I am sorry, because other members couldn't hear.
Is the executive member aware of the recent use of the council's Twitter feed to promote the excellent service which is now operating from Hemel Hempstead Station to Mayland's Business Park, passing through my division, which was a loss-making service and is now being taken over by a private operator?
Thank you very much. Derek Ashley.
The answer to the second part of the question is yes, and the first part of the question is no.
Well, on that basis, is there a supplementary? No, thank you very much. In that case, we move on now to highways. Questions to the Executive Member for Highways. Is there a question from a Liberal Democrat member? Stephen Giles Medhurst.
Thank you. Councillor Juris will be aware, and I've spoken to him, the press release, 18,403 issued last year, over 19,000 press releases in a year, that's interesting, mentioned a new process to fix potholes. There is growing concern, certainly within this group, and issues have been raised direct with officers, that the process is not as was agreed at Highways Panel, in that fixing potholes is now taking the 20 working days as the norm, rather than the max that was agreed at the Highways Panel. Will therefore the Executive Member agree to urgently review this matter to see what has gone wrong with Ringway yet again?
Thank you. Terry Douris.
I'm always very happy to discuss with officers the operational performance of our contractors. I do know that the arrangements for these, assessing priority and emergency repairs has to some extent changed, but I think that broadly speaking it is working. I accept wholeheartedly that there are some wrinkles that need to be ironed out, and it is a new procedure that is just bedding in, and I need to look at it as time goes on, but I think it's probably unfortunate from your perspective that the actions are taking place on the 20th day. I don't think that's replicated across the county as a whole, but as I said previously, I'm happy to look at it, and I am in constant discussion with officers to make sure that any new process and development that we introduce performs appropriately.
Thank you. Is there a supplementary?
Yes, there is a supplementary. Well, it seems to be replicated across 16 county divisions represented by myself and my group. So whether it's replicated against other county divisions, I can't be sure. Will he therefore re-look at this and equally look at why the website does not make it clear that urgent potholes, even though it's not what we agreed, have to be reported by telephone? What we agreed, actually, at Cabinet panel, and the minutes show it, was the option of putting those telephone contact details in if it was an urgent report, so that the resident could be rung back. There is no information on the Council's website to this effect.
Thank you very much. Terry Dorris again.
I will be dealing with that and referring that this afternoon, and thank you for pointing it out to me. I would say that one of the features of this was that there has been in the past some level of over-reporting, and people who have actually reported a pothole as a severe pothole or an emergency pothole of perhaps 6 or 8 inches deep. When they actually came out there, they found it wasn't. It was only a delamination. So this along with the triaging process that we are implementing, which is designed to actually fix a number of potholes in the same area, if that's so required, but to have a more consistent approach and cohesive approach is followed through. But having said that, I will look at specifically at the question of the information that's provided to the public on the website.
Thank you very much. And is there a question from a Labour member to the Exec Member for Highways? Joan King.
Thank you. As I'm sure you are aware, Watford and the surrounding area since Christmas has been gridlocked so many times, and I know not all of the repairs and closures are due to highways works, but is there any way that it can be coordinated that when roads close, we're not closing 3 or 4 roads in the same area, because people are having real trouble getting to work, getting to school, and I just wondered if that could be done, please.
Thank you. Terry Dorris.
Our network management team work very hard to make sure that there are consecutive programme of work, so that they don't all happen at the same time. You'll be referring to the Biffendale Road Works, which is part of the Watford Health Campus, which I think a good number of people in the Watford area are very supportive of. That was work that was undertaken by the contractors, but with a permit from us. There's also some other works that have been going on in the evenings and one or two other times for the cycleways in the bottom of Watford High Street, which is designed to improve the cycling facilities, the facilities for people who cycle and pedestrian transit as well, particularly around Watford High Street station. There is always going to be some level of inconvenience and disruption on the first couple of days. And it's worth actually mentioning, since it has been raised so many times this afternoon, that with Twitter and Facebook, it's very easy for people in the first couple of hours of any new roadworks to say, this is a disaster, it's absolutely awful, take it away, it shouldn't have happened. That's one of the downsides of modern social media. But we do work very hard to alert people to the roadworks and to actually provide sufficient information going forward.
Thank you very much. Is there a supplementary? No, there's not. So we move on to any questions from a Conservative member. Ken Crofton.
Thank you, Chairman. Is the executive member aware from Highways of the latest traffic incident in Walken, where two narrow lanes, namely Tots Lane and Winters Lane, were recently subject to radio newspaper, considerable newspaper attention? Despite my highways locality budget being spent on more restrictive signage, large articulated lorry drivers prefer to use the satellite navigation systems rather than their eyes and common sense. The latest catastrophe resulted in the articulated lorry being wedged between two houses, causing property damage, and the high street being closed for several hours. Has Terry Dorris any plans to assist not only my residents, but others in similar situations?
Thank you very much. Terry Dorris.
Thank you, Ken, for alerting me to that question beforehand. I too share your concerns that truck drivers may not be using the units that are designed specifically for them, and actually generally only cost about £375. The difference of these units using private sat-navs to those units using private sat-navs is that you input the details specific to your truck, the size, the weight, the length, etc., and the satellite navigation unit will direct you to the appropriate route. I too was concerned to see the images of the vehicle in Walken very recently, and this is just one of a number of incidents that occur in the county during the year. There are many country lanes, narrow roads and low bridges which are clearly unsuitable for certain vehicles, and drivers risk damaging their vehicles and potentially causing an accident by taking these routes. We cannot accept the inconvenience and in some cases the damage that vehicles cause whilst travelling along these routes. And I can announce today that I will be starting a campaign immediately to bring this to the wider commercial trucking community. And on behalf of Hertfordshire County Council, I will be writing to the Road Hauliers Association, Freight Transport Association, LGA and DFT to seek their support. Hertfordshire has one of the busiest road networks in the country, and I recognise the strategic importance of our county, but I believe that this action will be universally approved and welcomed by everybody living, working and travelling through Hertfordshire, the county of opportunity.
Thank you very much. There's no supplementary on that, so we now move on to questions to the Executive Member for Public Health, Localism and Libraries. Is there a question from a Liberal Democrat member? Sarah Bedford?
Yes, I'd just like to ask the Cabinet Member what she believes will be the problems caused not only by this year's in-year cuts in public health funding, but also by the removal of the public health ring fencing from the funding and the withdrawal of funding from organisations such as the probation and parole boards. Thank you.
Thank you. Theresa Heritage.
Thank you for that question, Sarah. I brought a report to the last Cabinet panel explaining the process that we would be going through, and we set out there the challenges that were there and how we would work through it. I mean, I can certainly read the report to you. What we're going to do is look at each area of the budget again, see how we can adjust potentially management costs of contracts. Let's see what else we can do. Sorry, bear with me. Bear with me a moment. Here we go. Completely gone a blank. I've gone a complete blank. I talked about it at Cabinet yesterday, and it's just completely gone from my mind. Could I give you a written response?
I'm sure that's fine. Sarah, is there a supplementary?
Well, I was just going to say I had read the Cabinet panel report because I went along to the Cabinet panel and participated in the discussion of the report. I was hoping we might have some more insight rather than saying we're just going to go forward, but apparently not. But thank you.
Theresa Heritage.
Yes, in response to that, yes, as we said at the Cabinet panel, which was just a few weeks ago, we're having to work through each contract and look how we can save it. So we haven't got that answer yet, no.
Thank you very much. So I now ask if there's a question for the Executive Member for Public Health, Localism and Libraries from the Labour Group. Oh, Roma Mills, sorry.
Thank you, Chairman. The report of the CQC inspection of the Hertfordshire Community NHS Trust, which took place last year, identified some very real concerns in the size of health visitor caseloads and the relative inexperience of the current workforce. Given that grant funding for the health visitor service, which was only handed over to the County Council in 2015-16, this very year, is scheduled for cuts totalling £1 million over the next 4 years. I wonder if the executive member, how the executive member considers that these concerns might be addressed. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Theresa Heritage.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to give you a similar answer to as I gave to Sarah. We're still working through how we're going to continue delivering alongside children's services with early intervention, health visiting. Most of the activities that are carried out are laid down in statute, so we have to do all that, and it's just finding the best way of delivering it. So I'm afraid I'm not able to give you a definitive answer at this time, but as soon as we have it, we will bring it back to panel.
Is there a supplementary? Yes, Roma again.
Well, again, as this is a new service that's become the responsibility of the County Council, I wonder if we have a time scale for when we're going to be able to bring it back to panel.
Theresa Heritage?
I'll have to come back, and I haven't got the forwarded plan in front of me, sorry.
Thank you very much indeed. And is there a question from a Conservative member? No. So we now move on to questions to the Executive Member for Resources and Performance. Is there a question from a Liberal Democrat member? Chris White.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm going to resist the temptation to ask the Executive Member whether he is aware of the parlous state of the surface of Royal Road in my division, and confine that to correspondence in the usual way. Instead, I want to ask him about business improvement districts. There is one up and running, I believe, in Hitchin, and there is one on its way in Watford, and one maybe on its way in St Albans, going out shortly to ballot. One of the things that has struck me about business improvement districts is that they were designed originally for single-tier areas, and in the two-tier area there is a slight danger that expectations of businesses will be raised, and those expectations may well include highways works and indeed other county council services. Is the executive member aware of this problem and working with those districts who are planning business improvement districts to make sure that everyone in the area wins out of this otherwise excellent scheme?
Thank you. Chris Hayward.
Thank you very much indeed. I'm glad you didn't ask me about the parlous state of your particular road in your division. Business improvement districts. No, in truth, I am not really aware of this or the particular authorities that you've mentioned. Would be very happy to work, though, with districts where this is relevant. I do believe with all these sorts of things, managing expectations is terribly important. What we don't want to do is to build expectations around things that cannot be delivered, whether they be infrastructure or anything else. So I would be happy to have a conversation with you outside the chamber, get the full details and information, and to follow it up and pursue it.
Thank you very much indeed. Is there a supplementary? Good. Then let's move to ask whether there's a question from a Labour member.
Yes, there is. There wasn't going to be, but there is now. As part of the well-founded and much-established Hitchin bid, would the executive member like me to explain to him how it works incredibly well in two-tier areas? There aren't problems, and the manifesto which is put forward by the bid board in order to secure the agreement of local businesses is very much cut to those services that it can provide.
Thank you. Chris Hayward.
Would you agree?
I would very much welcome a tuition session with Councillor Billing. She has tutored me in the past on various matters we cannot discuss in this chamber today. Can we? I have enjoyed working closely with you in the past, and I shall look forward to being fully briefed on this. Actually, your Hitchin colleague, Councillor Ashley, is also wishing to brief me on the same said matter, but I think I'd rather have you.
Nervously, I ask if there's a supplementary.
Would the executive member agree to see us together? We do work very nicely together, Councillor Ashley and I, on matters of common interest.
I think that's probably the safest proposal.
Moving swiftly on to ask if there is a question from a Conservative member to the Executive Member for Resources and Performance. Terry Douris.
Thank you, Chairman. I have a letter from a resident of mine, Mrs. Shields, and she asks a serious question. In the light of the recent Sourced campaign by Christian Aid aimed at encouraging local authorities to take steps on tax avoidance and evasion, would Chris Hayward please confirm the Council's position with regard to incorporating tax compliance questions into its procurement procedures? Specifically, has the Council adopted the questions set out in the Cabinet Office Procurement Policy Note 0314, which I understand are optional for local government?
Thank you. Chris Hayward.
This is an excellent question, Councillor Joyce, and thank you for giving me notice of it. Yes, I'm very happy to confirm that the Council's procurement documentation includes exactly the same questions on the bidder's tax records that the government requires of its departments. All companies bidding for contracts worth more than £5 million per year with Herts County Council are required to certify that they are tax compliant. This covers our 22 biggest contract areas, which are 66% of the business that we do with the private sector. To date, we have not had any submissions which have required us to exclude companies from doing business with us. We've taken a view that £5 million per year is an appropriate contracting level at which to ask these questions, whilst ensuring that our processes are not overly onerous for small businesses and voluntary and community sector bidders. This represents 121 smaller businesses carrying out between £1 million and £5 million per year activity with the County Council. We believe that this threshold will ensure that the tax records of larger companies are subject to sufficient scrutiny whilst minimising the impact on our local and very important SMEs.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dorris, is there a supplementary?
No, I'm sure Mrs. Shields will be very grateful for that, and I will pass it on to her.
Thank you very much. So let us move on to questions to the Executive Member for Adult Care and Health. Is there a question from a Liberal Democrat member? Ron Tindall.
Thank you, Chair. Given the fact that the future funding of care providers in the private sector could and the current sort of failure of the government to give us the full cost could ultimately drive 24% of care providers out of the market, which is a prediction by a respected public commentator. Would the executive member assure us that every support and encouragement is being given to care providers and that we are keeping a very close eye on those that may be suffering particularly and possibly going under?
Thank you. Colette Whitelow.
Thank you, Ron. Yes, I can give you that reassurance. We are very aware that there might be the kind of pressures that you referred to. As you know, we have a long-standing arrangement with the Hertfordshire Care Providers Association. We work very closely with them to ensure that the market is fully protected and covered for the sake of our residents. However, if we feel that there are concerns in that area or in any area of provision in the county, then we are already taking steps to make sure that we can be apprised as soon as possible so that we are being proactive in this. We're already having thoughts about what we could do if the situation that you have described arises, and as always, we are doing our very best to be prepared for that, for the protection of our residents.
Thank you. Is there a supplementary? Ron?
Just briefly, Colette, if you, like the other your colleagues, you are summoned to the presence of a Secretary of State, I trust you will push the argument.
Thank you. Colette Whitelow again.
Would you think I would do anything else, Ron?
So we now move to the Labour group. Is there a question from a Labour member? Drida.
Thank you. Is the executive member aware that there's a lack of transparency regarding the issue of carers' pay? And I refer to the fact that carers in Hertfordshire are paid at different rates according to the part of their duties that they're carrying out, i.e. for face-to-face contact with a client, they're paid at a higher rate and then at a lower rate of pay during travelling times.
Thank you. Colette Whitelow.
I'm aware that we do have some instances where there are differentials with regard to pay. For example, someone who is providing dementia care will receive a higher rate of pay than somebody who has not received training or hasn't got expertise in that. With regard to the particular issue that you raise, we have in the Hertfordshire Care contract stipulated that travel expenses must be paid. This wasn't the case before then, and when frequently travel time and travel allowance wasn't given. However, if you have specific concerns about that you can give us examples of, can certainly follow those up and make sure that everything is as it should be. Like you, we always seek utmost transparency in the delivery of our contracts, and you are our eyes and ears out there. If things are going wrong, we need to know about it. The more we know, the better able we are equipped to deal with it. Thank you. I'll expect to hear from you soon, Drida.
Thank you. Is there a supplementary question? Drida Gordon again.
Thank you. I'm not entirely certain that that's an answer to the question that I raised, because I'm actually talking about the same person carrying out different duties, and for that, that they get different rates of pay. And could I ask the executive member, does she not see this as an obstacle for the all-important recruitment and retention when Lidl's, and there are other supermarkets available, pay a consistent level of about £9 an hour?
Thank you. Colette Wyatt-Lowe again.
If there are inconsistencies where one person is receiving less than another for the same job, then of course we would look at that. Within the contracts that we have offered to the recently re-procured contracts, there are variations of pay within that. However, we stipulate that we wish all of our people who are employed on those contracts to receive the living wage, and we have, as you know in our budget, also stipulated that those in the care, working care homes and in the home care field do receive that, so that there is a differential. What we're trying to do is maintain a differential between their pay and, for example, the Lidls and the Amazons of this world, to try and protect the workforce.
Thank you very much. Which point of order? Sharon Taylor.
Drita's asked the same question twice and got an answer to a different question. The question is, the same person doing different parts of their work during the day, getting paid different rates of pay, so one rate of pay for face-to-face time, one rate of pay for travel time.
Thank you.
The question. It hasn't been answered. Could we
have
an answer?
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, there is no opportunity for you to ask another question of the executive member at this time. If we go all the way round again. I'm really sorry. A question has been posed and answered, and a supplementary posed and answered. Dissatisfaction with the response regretfully doesn't give an opportunity to pose another question. However, if we're still doing this by the time the questions come round again, I'm confident you'll take the opportunity to pose a question. So I'm now going to move on to ask whether there is a Conservative member who'd like to ask a question to the Executive Member for Adult Care and Health. Yes, Colin Woodward.
Thank you. Just taking up the point about care workers, is the Executive Member aware that whilst the rates of pay may have improved for the hour, there are substantial periods of unpaid time, as they're on zero contracts, between seeing a client, say, in the morning, and then several hours elapse before they come into pay again at a later time during the day? This actually results in very long days for some care workers, and not ending until late at night, with large periods of unpaid time in between.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask Colette Wyatt-Lowe to reply.
The flexibility inherent in zero-hours contracts does suit some care workers more than others. If there are specific issues where you feel that this practice is being used unfairly or inappropriately, then happy to look at that.
Thank you very much. Is there a supplementary? No. Okay, thank you very much. In that case, we will now move on to questions to the Executive Member for Children's Services. Is there a question from a Liberal Democrat member? Mark Watkin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, asking the Executive Member, one of the biggest risks, if you can call it that, facing the Children's Services is the unknown number of unaccompanied asylum children who are having to be housed and looked after, and children looked after in this county. I welcome the fact that they are able to come here, but I wonder about the uncertainty that lies behind this area. And I just wonder, not least because the county is asked to pay a considerable amount of its own funds for children who aren't necessarily residents from Hertfordshire. One question really is, has the executive member had a chance to raise this with the minister in terms of, and I'm thinking of Richard Harrington here, the minister from Watford, for his concerns or what he feels about this, and does he have any sense of how he's going to be able to cope with this challenge in the coming years?
Thank you. I'm going to ask Richard Roberts to reply.
Thanks so much for your question, Mark. No, I haven't spoken to Richard Harrington, and just in case he decides to give me 100 unaccompanied asylum seekers children to look after, I might not go and ask him, actually. It's a very serious issue, and there's a very uneven distribution of unaccompanied asylum seekers around the country. We have probably got more than most. We've got about 71 or two at the moment, and they keep trickling in ones and twos. So it's not a big issue that you hear about in the news regularly. And we haven't had a big influx since last year, but they're still coming in. We won't know how many might come, unaccompanied asylum seekers, as opposed to any other refugee, because they come arrive in the back of a lorry. And they will jump out on the M25 or the A5, and that's the first time we'll know about it. I think the most we got last year, or it might have been the year before, was 17 jumped out at Stevenage. So that's the scale of it. We don't know. Thank you, colleagues. So that's that part of the question. The second part was, how are we funded? And we are funded at the moment to the tune of about 60-odd% of an independent placement. So if a child wasn't placed with one of our own foster carers, chances are we would incur that extra cost. And generally that is what is...
Richard, thank you. Thank you very much indeed. But I can feel a supplementary coming on here.
I overrun again. I
Mark
do that.
Watkin, is there a supplementary?
Well, I think there is, Madam Chairman, and I thank the Executive Member for his detailed response, but I fear this is, the problem is going to be about how he can manage this, and he talks about the unequal distribution of these children around local authorities. Maybe he could talk to my colleague and friend, not colleague, but my friend Richard Harrington, about whether there could be a better distribution so that the county isn't having to accept more than its fair share.
Thank you. Richard Roberts.
Yes, thank you again, Mark. As I say, we have got 70-odd children. There are some shire counties or some boroughs, metropolitans, that have none. We are not seeking to have more unaccompanied asylum seekers seeking children to be housed in Hertfordshire. We feel that in this region we are doing our bit. Notwithstanding, Kent have got more than 1,000 unaccompanied asylum seekers, and something needs to happen there, but I am not seeking that they should come here. That would be, I think that's the, just because everybody's visited a minister, and I missed that, but actually, I did meet with a minister. I didn't doff, I have no forelock, but I did meet with a minister. It was David Gawk, and I did put to him the cost. Now, we are a financially challenged organisation. I put to him the cost of unaccompanied asylum seekers and that not being properly funded by government, and could he look into it? So I've already been to one minister, but Mark, for you, I'm willing to go to two.
Thank you very much. And we now look to the Labour Group. Is there a question from the Labour Group?
Thank you, Chair.
Nigel
Bell. I thank Councillor Watkin for taking my question there. But I'll come back to it then, Richard. Yeah. You did say at the Children's Services panel, and when we also had the discussion obviously at the cafe, about the 60% funded. But I thought that you were going to go back, and I know you're saying that you were going to go back and see if we could get more funding. Is it going to stay, as far as you know, 60%? Or was he going to come back to see if we could have more funding than 60%?
Thank you. Richard Roberts again.
I have asked the director through her contacts, which is the Association of Children's Directors. They have already, and will have more conversations around this funding issue. But I will take that further, as I say, than just talking with David Gawk, and we'll follow up with Richard Harrington as the appropriate minister, albeit him just next door.
Thank you. Is there a supplementary? Nope. Good. So let's move on and ask whether there's a question from a Conservative member. No, so we've now got about 5 minutes left of this hour, so we go back effectively to the beginning. And the first question was for the Leader of the Council, so I'm now going to invite a Liberal Democrat member to ask a question of the Leader of the Council. Sarah Bedford.
Thank you, Chairman. Over the past year, I've actually been in increasing pain during these council meetings. Today, I'm having to resort to pills, as usual, to get through the meeting. Not, I may add, because of the people opposite me, or indeed my colleagues behind. It's due to an operation and various musculoskeletal problems I have, which means I cannot extend my right foot and leg correctly, but I need to have it stretched out. I cannot do it in these seats.
The pain and discomfort caused by the unnatural position I have to sit in, either with my back or my leg, means that I am in great pain when leaving this meeting and cannot operate fully or walk fully for at least 48 hours. Despite this point being raised with a number of officers during the last 8 months, we are now still no further forward in improving my seating position. So far, the only suggestion is that I go and sit at the back of the room on my own. I might be unpopular over there, but they quite like me over here. Does the leader actually think the council is fulfilling its requirements under the DDA to make reasonable adjustments? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask Rob Gordon, the leader of the council, to reply.
Clearly, I can't assess what those adjustments should be without access to medical details, which it would be inappropriate for me to have. But I am aware of the issue, and I have made it clear to officers that I expect them to meet our DDA responsibilities as far as your needs are concerned.
Thank you very much. Is there a supplementary?
Could I just briefly say many thanks to Angela Buxey, who has been extremely helpful and polite trying to find a way around this situation. We came up with an agreement that was absolutely workable and she couldn't see any problems with. First of all, we were told it couldn't be done in a listed building, despite the fact it would be invisible. And now we've been told that if a small amount of panel is taken apart under this desk, it will cause the entire row of seats in front of me to collapse. Now, as I had taken out for me an entire supporting two-storey wall on my house and had that supported by a thin bit of metal, I'm fairly sure that a little bit of wood and these three lovely gentlemen in front of me could be easily supported in some way. There does not seem to be the will to actually get this done.
Thank you. The Leader of the Council again.
Again, you take me beyond my competence, either in terms of the detailed requirements of listed building consent or indeed the structural makeup of these elegant benches at which we sit. But I can but repeat that officers are aware and are seeking, with my approval, of course, to make appropriate adjustments.
Thank you. I'm going to move on and ask whether there's a question from a Labour member. And apparently not. Oh, I'm sorry, Drida Gordon.
My question to the Leader of the Council is he aware that carers in Hertfordshire are paid at different rates dependent on the parts of their duty that they are undertaking during their working day, i.e. that they, for face-to-face contact with a resident, that they are paid a higher rate and a lower rate for the time that they spend in travelling?
Thank you.
Fortuitously, this was drawn to my attention only a few minutes ago.
Thank you. I'm going to ask if there's a supplementary. Drida?
That may be the case that it was brought to your attention, but I don't believe that we've had a response.
Well, I can but reiterate. You asked me whether I was aware. I've confirmed I am aware of what you have said.
Thank you very much. So I now turn to the Conservative group. Is there a Conservative member who wishes to put a question to the Leader of the Council? No? So we move on to community safety and waste management. And there's a lot of excitement because there's 2 minutes left, so there's time for a question. Is there a question from a Liberal Democrat member to the Executive Member for Community Safety and Waste Management? Paul Zhukovsky.
I'd like to ask the Executive Member about the Forex Exchange Reserve that is associated with the waste management contract. The member has given a complete answer to issues surrounding the contract as to when those will come forward. Will he commit to having a full and thorough review of the reserve once the decision has been made on this contract to see whether any of it could be released for, say, other purposes?
And Richard, you have your full 2 minutes, and that will take us beyond the time, and that will be the end.
What a pity. What a pity, Madam Chair. I was rather hoping that my answer would run it out, but never mind. The answer to that is that the deliberations which I referred to earlier will take place at the panel and at Cabinet and subsequently at full Council, and will include a complete report against all heads surrounding this project. That will include the necessity to deal with the euro-pound relationships if we do decide to enter into this contract. and it is far too early, Madam Chairman, for me to give any commitments as to precisely what will happen, when and if this authority decides to take the step and enter into such a contract, making the assumption that it might, then the issues around funding it and the risk provisions against it will form part of the decision-making process that we go through then.
Thank you very much indeed. And I'm going to look to officers. Am I right? We've run out of time. We've done our full hour. Yes? Thank you very much indeed. So that's the end of Section 7, Questions to Executive Members. And we now move on